You're listening to The Block Experience, all things decentralized and open source. Enjoy.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt the podcast here. I just want to say this episode of The Block Experience is brought to you by our first sponsor, PrimeXBT. Whether you're looking to trade some of your favorite cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin, or even venture into other markets, PrimeXBT always has you covered. PrimeXBT offers traders access to a large variety of markets, including cryptocurrencies, stock indices, commodities, and even Forex pairs, and also have some incredible features such as anonymous accounting, Bitcoin deposits and withdrawals, industry-leading security, and even the ability to offer 1,000 times leverage. I've personally been using PrimeXBT for my trading for the past few months and have had a great experience using the platform, also using the platform's customer service. So I'm really proud that they're supporting this episode of the podcast, bringing you guys free podcasts every week. A link to the services PrimeXBT provide will be below, also a link to sign up to a new account. So thanks again, PrimeXBT, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. And yeah, I hope you continue and like the podcast. Enjoy. Firstly, thank you, Peter, for taking the time out of your day to come have a little chat with me.
No worries.
Obviously, shit's a bit crazy right now with everything going on in the world, so I appreciate it.
No worries.
Probably most of the people listening to this probably already know who you are, but do you just want to give a little introduction about yourself and how you originally got into the crypto space?
Yeah, my name is Peter McCormack. I host two podcasts, one called What Bitcoin Did, which is originally a crypto podcast, but now focused mainly on Bitcoin. But I also kind of look into other areas such as economics and markets and libertarianism, but not really me looking into it. I tend to bring on the experts and ask them all the questions I have. And then I have a second show called Defiance, which is touching all those subjects that Bitcoin touches, but not about Bitcoin. So human rights, censorship, freedom. And I've also just started making some films, which is a new thing I'm doing.
Amazing. So how did you originally find out about Bitcoin, or what was the story about you getting interested into Bitcoin, for example?
Yeah, so that goes back to about 2013. When one of my friends messaged me and said, there's this website you can buy drugs. You can buy drugs with online. And I was like, really? And they're like, yeah. I was like, wow, how do you do that? They said, well, you have to use this thing called Bitcoin and a Tor browser. And I was like, what are they? So I went around his house and he showed me and booted up the website. And there was the eBay for drugs. Like, what? This is fucking mental. So I ended up going on local Bitcoins and buying some Bitcoin and buying a few little naughty things online. And then I traded a bit and then kind of didn't think about it. I never really thought of Bitcoin as anything more than just some like digital currency. Right. I didn't know about Austrian economics or libertarianism and why this could take down the government. It was just like, it's just a currency I could use. And then kind of fell out of it, did a bunch of stuff. And then end of 2016, started 2017, kind of found Bitcoin again and been here since.
Amazing. How has your opinion changed on Bitcoin since 2013 or 14 first, let's say, to like now? Like this space is growing fast and like the space is pretty rife with fucking scammers, people just out here trying to get followers to like shill projects. They're not really here just to like, you know, for Bitcoin's main use case, which is banking the banked, right? Banking the unbanked. So what's your opinion on that shit?
Yeah, so from 2013 to now, like the two different spells, I guess the main difference is that I realized it was more than just some like FIFA points. It was more than a currency, like just an online currency. It was actually, there was a lot of thought behind it. But I would say my thoughts have changed quite a bit during the last, if anything, during the last 2 or 3 years and doing the podcast and such. So I completely got away from any tokens or altcoins, kind of realized most of them are just a bad copy of Bitcoin. Their use cases fail to be proven. It's this whole blockchain thing, it just is a myth. And you know, there's better people who can explain it technically than me, but it's just a rabbit hole of nonsense. So I focus more on Bitcoin. And then in terms of Bitcoin, I don't know, my views have changed. It's not so much that my views have changed on Bitcoin. It's my observations of the narratives are evolving. So when I first started using it, it was censorship resistance because I wanted to buy things online which I couldn't buy that were illegal. And then it was about taking down the central banks. And it's also, for some people, been about banking the unbanked. And I kind of think... I went down the libertarian rabbit hole, and I've been down the Austrian economics rabbit hole, and I've been down the fuck the government rabbit hole. And actually, I kind of get to the point where I just realize that, you know, well, Bitcoin is just for anyone, and they can find out what their need is, and that's cool. So yeah, I'm trying to explore it all, dude. But for me, it's more about what do I need it for. And then trying as best to understand what other people need it for, but trying to pigeonhole it as one thing, it might end up ignoring a bunch of other use cases.
What is Austrian economics? I've never heard of that word before.
Yeah, it's a school of economics, which is very different from Keynesian economics. And there's a very good book written by Safety and a Moose called The Bitcoin Standard, which talks a lot about Austrian economics related to Bitcoin. And, it's an area of economics which the libertarians like. I would be the worst person to explain it, the absolute worst person to explain it, because it's not something I study. It's just something I've read and gone, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But it's much more around completely open and free markets, no regulation, in that the market will figure out a fair price for everything. And regulation creates imperfect competition, so actually it's better to have no regulation. It's just some of those kind of topics, and I find it interesting. I'm not 100% there, but I do find it interesting.
So normally people who align with Bitcoin's core values sort of line up on that?
Some of them do, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure it's for everyone. I'm sure there might be some Keynesians out there who like Bitcoin as well, but there's certainly a certain area or subgroup within Bitcoin who really follow or appreciate Austrian economics and why Bitcoin is a good fit.
Okay, that's interesting. I'll have to look into it. How are you personally navigating like this tough time? So like the past 3 months been pretty rough, not just Bitcoin, because there's worse things than Bitcoin happening in the world right now, but
yeah,
do you just like hold on to Bitcoin and just that's it, and you don't sell anything, you don't trade it, you just hold it?
Yeah, in some ways, dude, I'm like focused on thinking about other things right now, because I mean the various stimulus packages that the governments are having to use to stabilize the economy as best possible or ensure people don't starve, and that is like a use case for Bitcoin. That explains to people that this is why you need Bitcoin, this is why you need scarce assets. You can't just print as and when you choose. But I'm also at the same time, like, I get that use case. And I just think there's bigger questions at hand now. Yeah. There's bigger ideas about the role of the state, whether encroachment from the state, whether the state can do things that individuals can't. I think there's some very complicated questions out there that need answering. And if anything, I'm trying to navigate that rather than you know, Bitcoin fixes everything. I'm much more interested. And also it's exposed for me the real gulf in opinions between my friends who aren't Bitcoiners and Bitcoiners, and the way that people think about the state. And I just put a question up on Facebook. Just, I always do this every now and again, just to try and check myself for what my friends are thinking, because they are very different from the Bitcoin community. And so I was like, do you believe that the government restrictions are an overreach, UK specifically, for example, going for a drive, sunbathing, blah, blah, blah. Do you worry about, we are descending into a police state, do you worry about the government will not retract their powers? And universally, every single person is saying, nope, not worried, absolutely support the government, people are idiots. So that's the opinion there. And then you go into Twitter, and a lot of the opinions are much more like, this is an overreach of the state, we're losing our civil liberties. So me, I'm right now, I'm interested in that gap. Why does that gap exist? Who is right? Who is wrong? I've struggled to see it as black and white. I do worry about the encroachment of civil liberties. Absolutely. I do worry that information we're being fed is wrong. I do worry that this whole lockdown will all have been a waste of time because it wouldn't have made any difference. I worry about all those things, but I'm very interested in why there is such a difference in people's opinions and how you bridge that gap between people. So that's where I'm kind of focused right now.
Yeah, I feel like over the last like year, maybe over the last, I don't know, 24 months, I've seen like your content a lot, like a dramatically shift from this is Bitcoin, like we need to push Bitcoin to like real world problems, you know? Obviously that's what you're doing with like Defiance right now, and it's like amazing. But yeah, you're one of the only people I know that have taken a step back from the space, and like, because it's pretty much just an echo chamber of garbage most of the time.
Yeah, and people fighting. I think some of it's just growth. You know, you've got to remember there's a lot of different subcultures within Bitcoin, or different grooves or different identities, and also a lot of people just cheerlead it. I do think some people have blind spots of reality. One, I was having a conversation with somebody earlier, and I was saying to him, I said, look, people talk about mass adoption, and I've had this conversation before. We have mass awareness. Like, I very rarely meet someone who hasn't heard of Bitcoin.
Right.
So what is the gap? What is the reason? How do you get them from hearing to having to buy it? And I kind of think there's three groups. There's those who come to Bitcoin through pain, like they've been through something. They might be Argentinian and inflation's wiped their money out, or similar in Venezuela, right? Or they come for the gain, so the market's going a bit bubbly and crazy, and they're hearing about their friends making money, so they dive in. Or curiosity. I think people come. I think they come for those three reasons, but we still have a very, very low number of people who have actually purchased and support Bitcoin. So why is that? And how do we help facilitate that? I've often tried to teach my friends. They don't care. So perhaps at some point they will start asking the right questions. They will say, yeah, what's happened to my savings? Or what's this Bitcoin thing about? And then maybe they'll go to Google and then they'll find my podcast, and maybe they'll find my beginner's guide. So I can't remember. What was the original question?
I think it was, I can't remember. I agree with you. I've never actually said this, but I think it's a bit of a, like, it's like, when you put it like that, it's a bit of a stretch to ever get adoption for Bitcoin, right?
It's a massive leap. You're basically trying to get someone to, well, listen, look, one of the things about Bitcoin is the gains are great and we obviously want them all, but if you're a real big supporter of Bitcoin, fundamentally outside of the gains, you fundamentally believe and support the technology, then you have to ride out some tough times, some bear markets, some, you know, brutal situations. Ask a very hard thing to try and get the common man to come and do. And I think there is a big gap between the common man and maybe a Bitcoiner, because what you're saying to them is like, look, there's this amazing technology that is censorship resistant, seizure resistant, and there's a hedge of hyperinflation, blah, blah, blah. But if you actually run through that and you say, you know, one of my friends is censorship resistant, they'll go, what's that mean? It's like, wow, if you want to buy something that, and you don't want the government to know, they can't stop you. And they'll be like, well, when does that happen? I'm 42 and I've got a wife and two kids. I just go shopping at Sainsbury's. Oh, I was like, okay, what? But you can, it's seizure resistant. It's like, what does that mean? It's like, well, the bank can't steal it. They're like, well, they never have stolen my money. It's like, yeah, but do you see what happened to Greece and in Cyprus? And so, yeah, asking them to invest in a volatile asset in case a scenario that's never happened to them might happen. Now, look, we all know it might happen. Just trying to say, to convince that person is really hard. So then you have to say to them, yeah, but, you know, you have to account for a potential black swan event and hyperinflation and to protect your money. And again, they're like, well, I've never been through a hyperinflationary event. So like trying to convince some people, it's really, really hard. Therefore, yeah, you maybe have to get them in on the rebel kind of anarchist underground, be involved in a cool technology thing. These are big things to bridge. Bull markets are much better. It's look. The numbers going up. If you buy something, you're going to make some money. That's a much easier thing to sell to people. But bridging that gap's really hard. And I spend a lot of time thinking about that.
Yeah. Because let's say you got this huge pump, like people come, but then people leave. So,
yeah.
Like, I think the only way to get like real world adoption is sort of. So, you've seen these new like banking apps like Starling and.
Yeah.
They've got good UI. They're targeting between 20 and 30 year olds. they've got like some cool features, like see where you're spending money and some good offers. Like, it's going to take a company like that to like partner up with Bitcoin, or I guess it's anyone in the blockchain space, but mainly Bitcoin, let's say, and then use Bitcoin maybe as a, like an option, you know?
Yeah, but we've got that. We've got Revolut's got Bitcoin. Revolut's got support for it. So again, I just think these are big leaps we're trying to have, and I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. It's just I spending a lot of time thinking about how it happens.
Hmm. And then also, like, is it a payment system or is it a store of value? Because that's a pretty common debate in the community.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I don't underestimate how difficult it is to get this across to people. Now, there are other people it's easier to convince. Like I say, Venezuelans who can use this, who are in, say, the middle classes, it kind of makes sense because they can, on a weekly basis, avoid their inflationary event. And you can probably convince some Argentinians because they've had their currency debased so many times. Mm. I just think it's in Western nations, it's very difficult. I think it's going to take time because we've patiently got to pick up people along this journey who are willing to take a bit of the pain or to ride out the bear markets until eventually we do get some kind of wider scale adoption, or we just go through an event where people are like, fuck the government, I've had enough of this bullshit.
Well, shouldn't that be now, really?
Well, it could be, but I think more people are looking to the government now to protect them. Mm. I think it's almost afterwards where you get people to ask the right questions.
Yeah. You went down to London recently, right? I saw you took some like a little bit of heat online for like going up to like some homeless people asking questions without masks.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Well, so I woke up and found out that lockdown was coming the next day. And my sister, I spoke to my sister. She works for Crisis. Mm. And I was like, what's going on with the homeless people? She said, I don't know. So I was like, well, fuck it. I'm going to go and find out. So so I was 16 days after getting sick. So the UK government guidance at that point was 7 days self-isolation, 14 if it's someone you live with, so you can have their 7 days and your 7 days. I went for 16 anyway, just out of safety. Packed up my car. I couldn't get a mask or any gloves because I had 2 hours. Well, I literally had a couple hours notice before I left. So I just made the decision that I was going to go down. I took disinfectant wipes and I had like a scarf, but I didn't use it when I was doing the interviews because you couldn't hear myself. So, and then it was a two camera. So I had someone with me, two cameras set up, one with me with the camera filming and asking questions of somebody filming the two of us. And the reason you do that is if you've only got one camera, it's very difficult to do clean edits. Mm. But if you've got two, you can move around. So it's a lot easier to do edits with stuff like that. And so went down, did the filming. Each person I spoke to, I was very, very clear. I said, look, we're going to have to keep at least this distance. This is how we're going to run it. These are the questions I want to ask you. And, you know, did the two interviews. And then afterwards, my engineer sent me a version of the video to kind of review, and from that I just took a screenshot. And the reason I took a screenshot of me from with me and the guy just to highlight, say, look, hey, I've been down to London, so here's me. And people just jumped to some conclusions. So the first thing, there's a couple of people saying, oh, that's so narcissistic, you've got someone to take a photo of you taking a photo of a homeless person. It's like, no, that's not what's happening. We're both the two cameras, every single thing I go to will have always two cameras. Now, usually, say all my footage, which was taken out in Venezuela and Colombia, the difference is we had two cameramen, so I didn't have to carry a camera.
Right.
So you still had the two shots, but this one, I was having to carry one of the cameras. So it wasn't, I didn't go up to them and say, hey, can you take a photo of me taking a photo of this homeless person? It was a still shot taken from a video edit. So that was the first thing. Oh, the other thing is that angle didn't look great because it was a moment where I didn't cross my mind, but I'd bent down to ask something. And I probably was about a meter apart, maybe a little bit more, rather than two meters. And then there were people saying you didn't have a face mask, etc. So I don't know. People just found a reason to pull every single part of it apart when I kind of followed the most strict rules I could. I agreed with the person. And yet every day there's people going to supermarkets, open mouthed, speaking, talking, touching every item in the shop.
Right.
you're taking significant risks of because you have to. And here's me trying to tell an important story and people just attacking me. But it's just that thing, dude. I've got so fucking used to it. Yeah. And I should probably even stop acknowledging and talking about it. But when you're creating content, all that happens is you just have to deal with criticism all the time. And I think that was that a few haters just thought, oh, here we go. Where can we pick a hole in this? Oh, right. He's not got a mask on. Let's have a go at him for that. Or it looks like he's taken off. You know, so they just pick holes. And yeah. It was very sad. I didn't actually end up publishing the video afterwards because I was like, well, I just can't be bothered to get shouted out for this.
Hmm. You should probably publish it though, you know?
I just can't be bothered. It's out of time. It lost its relevancy.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about, obviously, the work you're doing with Defiance. Could you just tell us a little bit about what you're working on and some of the projects you're currently producing?
Well, so the podcast is going, but the film's essentially on pause right now. The problem I've got with it is that video you need to travel to do, and I'm on lockdown. Mm. So I did go out and do my video in Venezuela and Colombia, and I'm just writing the scripts for my video for when I was at the Turkey-Greece border. And then I've then got Chile and El Salvador. So I've got five in the bag. But really, I can't really do anything else until these are done because I'm on this lockdown, which is a shame, really. I was really enjoying going out and finding these stories and telling these stories. But what all it really is that what Bitcoin did works well as a podcast, and Defiance is okay as a podcast, but some of the stories I want to tell, you kind of have to be in person. You definitely. Really need to. Yeah, so that's something I'm working on there.
What was it like traveling down to Venezuela and Colombia?
It was cool. I mean, I didn't overly think about
like from
it.
From where I'm standing, like, it seems a bit dodgy, right? Or how did you like prepare for that? Because obviously you would need people with you. You need like somebody to show you around.
Yeah, I booked a fixer. So I went through someone I know who had a fixer there. So they're not cheap, but they look after your security and safety, and they also act as a guide. But I try not to overthink a bit, because if you overthink it, you're going to tell yourself, well, I'm going into one of the most dangerous countries in the world, into a slum where they kidnap people. And that's, when you think about it, it's dangerous. So you just don't think. I just didn't think about it. I was like, I'm just going to go. And what will be, and hopefully I can get some good, interesting content, which happened. But yeah, I can't overthink it, dude.
Did you get into any like scary moments or anything? See anything like wild?
Didn't see anything wild. Saw a huge pro Maduro protest, which was interesting. That wasn't expecting to see that. And we got pulled over by the police, and they threatened us that if we were making anti-government content, they'll throw us in jail. And they wanted to have a look through our cameras, but our fixer turned around and convinced him, said, look, when they're just tourists, they wanted to go into the slums. And he kind of convinced them not to, which was amazing, because if they had, they would have seen all these interviews on our cameras, and that would have been a nightmare.
So I'm not really familiar, but they have like two presidents, right? So like one is technically the president of Venezuela, and the other one sort of controls like the army, which sort of makes him powerful, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're both a problem, really. I mean, Maduro is a gangster, and he controls the guns and he controls the country, but he's just a narco-terrorist, essentially. But Guaido comes with his own problems, comes with his own accusations of corruption, something I'm looking into myself as well. Now, I mean, if you ask me, Guaido seems like the least bad of two bad options, but it's really quite a fucked country, and the problems out are not simple. They are not. This is not a simple situation to solve.
Do you reckon it's fixable?
I mean, everything's fixable, but you've got to remove Maduro, who controls the army. You've got to get the paramilitaries out of the gold mines and the parts of the country they're controlling, and the trafficking routes they're controlling. You've got to rebuild the institutions and the judiciary and implement a free press, while at the same time, whoever's doing that is taking out the corrupt people who also need hold into account and need to stand trial. I mean, it's just this. It's such a complicated thing. I'm still looking into it, and the rabbit hole gets deeper, and you realize it's like this goes back generations. This is generations of systemic corruption within the country, and every single leader is a fucking gangster.
It's probably going to take generations.
Like, this goes way... So even today, I was finding out this goes way before Hugo Chavez. But I just think it's symptomatic of the world today. All we have is corrupt bullshit leaders. And it's just... I just does your fucking head in after a while.
What did you see in terms of... Because I saw you did some, like, Bitcoin classes, like, teaching people, or you went to some Bitcoin classes. What was that like? Like, seeing the adoption down there?
Interesting. So I saw some Bitcoin classes. I'll admit afterwards, I don't even imagine many of those people afterwards will be using Bitcoin. We were in Cucuta, which is the border of Venezuela, where people are just fucking broke. They're living on nothing. And this lad, he's a great lad. He's trying to teach them about Bitcoin. And some of them are sharing phones. Some of them have data plans. And they're trying to even earn like a dollar a week if they can, or a dollar a day if they're lucky. And they're not going to use Bitcoin. What are they going to use Bitcoin for? They spend 20% on a transaction cost. Yeah. Now, they might, if they can get a decent job, earn a good amount of money, they may use it as a way of doing remittance. That is a genuine problem that it can solve. If you're trying to earn money and get it back into the country to your family, you can. Who don't have a bank account, you can genuinely do that. And that is a genuine solution. But most of these people, I think it was like a soft introduction, but I don't imagine how much they'll use it afterwards.
Who was it? Just him? Like, was he the organizer of the class, or is this like a?
Yeah, he says. So they've got this NGO where they provide food and education. Right. So food for the homeless people. Well, the people coming across the border who are starving and need to eat. And they provide education as well for the kids. And just within there, he provides an additional Bitcoin class every now and again, which was happening while we were there. But it's whilst it could help. Sorry, dude. Sorry. It's really... I think sometimes we see something like that and we hope it's more successful than it is. Most of these people I was looking at, I was thinking, they've got no money. How are they going to use Bitcoin?
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense, does it?
Not always. No, not always, dude.
So one thing I wanted to get your opinion on, because you've been pretty prominent over the years for like Bitcoin maximalist, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get your opinion on like Ethereum, let's say, for example. And the growth they've seen in like DeFi services over the past year has been pretty parabolic. And like a lot of people are starting to use them for like banking services, like interest and banking the unbanked, for example. What's your opinion on that? Because it's sort of the same principle as Bitcoin, I guess. So I just wanted to know what your thoughts were.
This is where I might sound like a bit of an arsehole. Honestly, I just don't care. I don't look at it. So I can't give you an opinion because I just don't spend any time looking at it. I mean, the only thing I care about or may use is I may use the odd stable coin, which is issued on Ethereum, like USDC at some point, if I wanted to store some digital dollars and I had the confidence in Ethereum for it. But honestly, I know a lot of people like it. A lot of people think DeFi is a big and important thing. And then there's other people who are very critical of it. It's really hard to know where it's going to go, but I'm just not interested in it. It just doesn't excite me in any way. I don't look at this and go, oh, this is exciting.
What does excite you in the space? Just nothing?
So that's an evolving thing. So Bitcoin, I really, really like Bitcoin, but my era of Bitcoin, I'm interested in it much more than say the taking down the central banks is where it can help people. So the more the direct use cases. So I just interviewed this lad from Syria and he teaches refugees how they can use Bitcoin to take money as they're migrating across Europe, trying to find a new home. He teaches them that, like, because basically they've got to either take all their money in cash or leave it behind or whatever. But right. if they sell it into Bitcoin, they can take that across them, take it across borders. I mean, when I was at the Turkey-Greece border, one of the biggest complaints from the migrants is that they've been getting beaten up and having their phones and money stolen. So I think that's an interesting use case. I'm more interested in the human rights and the kind of specific, more kind of developing country use cases. That's probably where my interest is.
Amazing. Where can people find you? So do you want to give a shout out to like Defiance and what Bitcoin did?
Yeah, sure, man. Thanks for having me on. This has been cool. So you can find me at whatbitcoindid.com. That's my Bitcoin show. Or if you want to follow Defiance, that's on defiance.news. That's you can access both the films and the podcast. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, it's at Peter McCormack. DMs are open. Just don't send me any nonsense and I'll probably reply.
Amazing.